Morning, it's Jeff Wine, host of The Car Show here on Sun Sounds Radio. Folks, once again, we've got an action-packed show for you today. We're going to catch you up on the latest and greatest of the world of the automobile. Well, we got a big racing weekend going on right now. IndyCar, Formula One, and NASCAR all in action today. We'll also catch up on the Formula One movie, which my wife and I got to see earlier this week. We'll also talk about what's going on with Scottsdale and some of their roads and a purchase of the assets of one car company by another, which actually helps benefit their factory here in Arizona. We've got some weird and unusual automotive news. We'll talk gas prices. Then, of course, it wouldn't be the car show without a little car talk. You know what to do. Fasten that seatbelt nice and tight. It's going to be a fast ride on the car show. Formula One is in Silverstone, and the Formula One movie with Brad Pitt was shot a lot of its main scenes at Silverstone. Well, from the pages of the website The Drive, the F1 movie threatens to change the very sport it highlights. Well, despite Sunday's Austrian Grand Prix revving up cinematic startup against the Red Bull's scenic circuit, Brad Pitt's F1 movie debuted overshadowed the sport it's actually designed to boost. Well, for the past 2 years, Apple TV's goal of creating a realistic racing movie has blurred the lines between fact and fiction in F1. The film follows the APXGP team, a struggling Formula One team, recruits retired driver Sonny Hayes, which is played by Brad Pitt, to bring in the to help be the singular solution to all the black and gold team's flaws. Unlike the slew of racing films preceding it, F1 aimed to slip the sport's paddock back in its shop and the film and the Hollywood crew just as another team. To do so, the minds behind the movie Top Gun, working with producers Lewis Hamilton and Toto Wolff, made Brad Pitt and his co-star Damison Idris, playing the hotshot young rookie Joshua Pierce, regulars on the F1 calendar. But rather than a seamless fit into the sport, the entertainment venture seemed to turn the racetrack into a movie set. With fake podiums, media pen interviews, the sport's 20 drivers as background actors doing their own day jobs, and things like weaving regulars like Will Buxton, David Croft, and Martin Brundle into the plot. Now, for existing F1 fans, the highly contentious and highly anticipated blockbuster acted like a love letter to the sport, littered with cheeky inside jokes and cameos and interactive fan experiences. At the worst, it was a house guest at an overstayed welcome. Now, the film's best asset is its racing. The opening 24-hour Daytona racing scene is objectively good, and also better than the F1 scenes that don't hold a flame to the actual sports car racing in the beginning of the movie. But for non-fans, the racing scenes were almost too good. The film, which was going for realism, should have gone full throttle as Formula One drivers appeared on track as techie behind-the-scenes content lifted the curtain of the off-track aspects. Things like driver's room and air tunnels and handfuls of things that were written in for Brad Pitt's character failing to be penalized for cheating were glaringly obvious to hardcore fans. At times, they were more obvious that Hamilton had a role of bringing the film to life with several scenes and plot lines seemingly straight out of his own racing career. Well, above all, the film failed to latch on to one of the storylines, successfully build out the characters, and relied heavily on Pitt's over-the-top bad boy charm as it came off a little bit too strong, leaving a bad taste in some viewers' mouth. Now, the charismatic Hayes was the hero, but there was no single villain. There could have been rival teams or Hamilton himself villainized in the media, the sport's ruling body, or the racer's own physical limitations. Scenes of Hayes strategically and purposefully crashing himself out and other drivers of the race to bring out a safety car to provide an interesting way to circumvent the rules at times acted like a comedic relief. But in other ways, an unrealistic lack of penalties didn't show Hayes' racing genius as intended and instead undercut the magic of the sport. Now, F1 failed to capture that full complexity. On top of it all, creating a car for combat without any regard for safety felt like a step back in its efforts to make a historically safe sport safer. Now, the biggest backlash against the movie garnered stemmed from its romantic subplot. On the surface and from an F1 outsider perspective, a love story between Pitt's character and the fictional team lead designer was a perfectly fine plot line. But in the context and the obstacles of the stereotypes of women in motorsports have historically faced while breaking into the industry, along with the season-marking first time a female race engineer is on the grid, the storyline felt unnecessary and potentially even a little offensive. Now for the plot holes and the AI-adjacent sound scripting, the film managed to achieve what sports executives have failed to produce, a show that unites the new and the traditional fans alike. Moviegoers unfamiliar with Formula One and the sport, the film projected to create a second surge in F1 popularity in the United States. F1 already broke into production and the studio box office by bringing $144 million in its worldwide debut. The globe-trotting European sport infected masses with the Formula One fever in 2019, following the release of the Netflix show Drive to Survive. With the docuseries now in its 7th season, not yet renewed for an 8th, Hollywood came in perfect time with the sport's popularity surge at the turn of the decade hadn't been in a steady shape, with spectators and public opinion swiftly falling in the midst of Max Verstappen's winning streak. While the sport now boasts 750 million global fans, amassed a record 3.1 million ESPN viewers for the 2014 Miami Grand Prix, well, the U.S. launch date was oddly timed, falling on the same weekend as the Austrian Grand Prix. By sheer luck on Sunday, converted viewers with something to latch onto as a teammate title on track tussle paired with feisty radio messages from championship leader Oscar Piastri and underdog rookies scoring points, opening last lap crash between Kimi Antonelli and Red Bull's Max Verstappen, and a handful of DNFs. But with the potential for a second wave, there's a question where does the sport go from here? The sport could be the new fad, creating the new hot F1 summer, and some things are already touting. It's true, the advertising around the film, McDonald's, Happy Meals, Heineken commercials, It Girls competing on the soundtrack. Where are the influencers? The New Yorker cartoons, the Cosmo features partnering with the sport's ever-growing cast of influencers, everyone talking about this. Buying a movie ticket isn't a commitment to tune in to come to race day, but while the film may convert a new generation of newbie race fans, it also threatens to create confusion. The New York Times review of the film clarified to readers what and who was fictional versus what was real. After becoming an omnipresent part of the sport, F1 has a risk of becoming attached to its future. Everyone loves an underdog story, and F1 did a good job with that one, with speed shown at the rate that dizzying and addictive. The sport has also a similar underdog story back in the States in 2019, but F1 isn't the same sport it was 6 years ago. Well, I can tell you from personal experience, my wife and I both enjoyed the film. I was expecting less, and I got more. I do agree there are so many things a true F1 fan would say, that doesn't happen like that. That's not the way things happen. We don't do it like that, etc. But from the person who's not a Formula One fan, who doesn't watch it on a weekly basis, the story carried a good storyline and provided a lot of action and intrigue. So I think overall, I gave the film an A-, and I think it did a good job of what it was designed to do, was meet that halfway point between true F1 fans and newcomers to the sport. Well, from the pages of the Scottsdale Independent, substandard materials used to pave Scottsdale roads in the past. Well, in the words of Councilman Barry Graham, the condition of Scottsdale's roads is deplorable. On a scale of 0 to 100, the Pavement Conditions Index, or the PCI, with 100 being newly paved roads, Scottsdale streets average a 64. Well, the national average is a 68. Well, this is not good enough for a city with a mission statement, simply better service for a world-class community, according to the mayor's department. Well, I don't think there's anything average about Scottsdale, she said. In fact, the city's average PCI rating dropped 22% since 2018. Well, the main reason for that drop, Graham said, is given the fact that they've had funding issues with past budgets. The prior city council have had different priorities, Graham said. The current city budget has $22 million set aside for pavement overlay projects this year. In an attempt to address the city's falling PCI numbers, the projected budget for next year is almost double at $42 million. $42 million in projected overlay projects. With directing the staff's focus on those roads is a bigger to overcome these biggest deficits. Now, another reason Scottsdale has fallen behind on the road repairs, according to a spokesperson, well, the reality is they're falling apart faster because of the inferior products and procedures used to pave the roads in the past. City used non-standard pavement materials and processes for the past 7 years, the 7 years between 2014 and 2020. That move was done in order to cut costs, but also to improve the PCI scores. While the staff member responsible for these decisions is no longer with the city, we're now facing those consequences. Some of these materials should have lasted 15 years. They're deteriorating after just 7 or 8. In fact, they're deteriorating faster than that. Some roads were repaved earlier and expected to last, but the problem's worse is that the lack of materials and preventative maintenance. Treatments like fiber seal are falling apart within 3 to 4 years, well short of the expected 6 to 15 year lifespan for properly maintained surfaces. Historically, a consistent maintenance plan was not in place, but that has changed. Moving forward, we're implementing a proactive maintenance plan that includes crack seals, asphalt resurface treatments to extend pavement life. Well, the reality is that we worry about the overemphasis on these citywide PCI scores rather than safe and durable roads led to short-sighted decision-making. Scottsdale needs to adhere to pavement standards and avoid quick fixes for visual purposes and prioritize roads with the worst conditions. So Scottsdale, not doing the best thing for their roads, but now it seems like they're back on track and they're doubling their budget for 2026 for road repair. Over on the pages of the Business Journal, the headline says, Lucid moves into the former Nikola digs in Phoenix. Well, California-based Lucid Group has opened a City of Phoenix hub and a Coolidge manufacturing plant after acquiring both sites from Nikola Corporation, amid the Phoenix truck manufacturer's bankruptcy auction. Lucid, which on June 11th purchased all these assets, they had a big grand opening marketing a strategic expansion for the company, bolstering its manufacturing footprint and warehousing over adding additional 884,000 square feet in Arizona. Now, these new facilities provide Lucid with expansion capabilities and immediate advantages and allowing us to have more product information and innovation and testing components and systems, according to Adrian Price, Lucid's Senior Vice President of Operations. This creates a powerful and integrated ecosystem with our existing manufacturing facility in Casa Grande. Now, Lucid's Phoenix hub, the former Nikola headquarter building, and the Coolidge facility will support the company's primary manufacturing factory, AMP1, in Casa Grande, and continues to ramp up production of the Lucid Gravity electric vehicles at the Pinal County factory, part of Lucid's expansion into Arizona. The company is aiming to offer 500 new jobs in the valley over the next 5 years. Following the acquisition of the Nikola assets, Lucid also extended job offers to 300 former employees. 250 have already joined the company. We're basically helping continue employment for people who were working here previously, and according to Mark Winterhoff, who is Lucid's interim CEO, tapping into this pool is a win-win situation because of their knowledge about electric vehicles and electric vehicle drive systems is something that we need. Well, Lucid acquired the Nikola Corporation manufacturing facility and its Phoenix headquarters for $17 million in cash, plus assumption of the company's two buildings. Now, during an earnings call, Winterhoff called the acquisition a truly great deal that allowed the company to gain assets and valued at hundreds of millions of dollars, or basically pennies on the dollar. Now, the Lucid facilities included development and equipment and extensive battery and environmental testing chambers, full-size chassis diameters, machine equipment, and more. Lucid Phoenix Hub will also be a home to research and development, according to Winterhoff. mainly for engineers in this facility taking advantage of things that were already installed. There's a machine shop here. There's dynos. Nikola also had electric drivetrains as well as hydrogen drivetrains. We're obviously focusing on electric drivetrains, so this is where our research and development is going to be. Lucid, meanwhile, will use these new Coolidge facilities and warehouses and also for pre-delivery inspections. There's also going to be a pilot factory line where we're going to build the first vehicles for our midsize platform that is currently under development, and that will be built in Coolidge. Now, Lucid's midsize SUVs are slated to debut in 2026 with a price tag of around $50,000, rivaling Tesla's Model Y and the Rivian R2. Now, Lucid talks about automakers and other manufacturing tech capabilities. Lucid is located about an hour south of downtown Phoenix. They've been operating in Pinal County since they opened its first phase of this factory and kicked off vehicle production back in 2021 with the Air sedan. Lucid also started producing the Gravity SUV at its factories last year, with customer orders for the modified Grand Touring version starting last November. Well, last month, Winterhoff told investors and analysts during the company's first quarter earnings call, number of new conversations with other automakers looking to leverage the electric vehicle company's Casa Grande plant, with the uncertainty over the tariffs and efforts for offshore manufacturing. Lucid also is well positioned to navigate the automotive industry related tariffs that produces electric vehicles, electric drive units, battery modules, and battery packs at its Casa Grande plant. Those conversations are still ongoing, Winterhoff told the Business Journal. I mean, you can imagine with the recent developments, there's a lot of demand for production in the United States, and those are two very strong opportunities for our company. So this is great. Arizona positioned very well in the electric automobile and electric truck industry moving forward. Our racing going on today, as I mentioned, Formula One, and I'm actually recording my show this morning, so this is fairly live. Huge rain in England right now, and Formula One is racing in the rain, so I'll have those results for you next weekend. Starting at about, the IndyCar race starts at about 10 o'clock on Fox, so if you want to switch over to Fox and catch a little IndyCar, that's going to be on Fox, and that race is in progress right now. And Alex Palou, the series leader, is on the pole. Christian Lundgaard for Ariel McLaren will start in second. Kiffin Simpson third. Nolan Siegel in fourth. And Colton Herta will start as far as the top five. And they're racing in Mid-Ohio, which is a great sports car track. One of the tracks that I haven't been to, so that's on my to-do list. And we'll have those results for you next weekend. NASCAR news. The headline reads, Suarez said, there wasn't love anymore, but no hard feelings at Trackhouse. Well, Daniel Suarez was not required to attend the NASCAR media bullpen in Chicago on Saturday, but he not only did he show up, he spoke candidly about his future beyond Trackhouse racing. Well, the two sides announced earlier this week that they have agreed to part ways at the end of the season. Suarez has driven the number 99 Chevrolet since 2021 with two wins for the team. Justin Marks hired Suarez as his flagship driver when he founded Trackhouse Racing. I've known for several months this was going to happen, Suarez said. It's like everything in life. Things change. People change. Companies change. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. There just wasn't any love anymore. And there's no hard feelings. And I didn't want to stick to the amazing years we had together in the process. It was just time for a change. Well, Suarez appeared on the June 25th episode of the Dale Jr. Download and mentioned that things were uncomfortable with this season. And then he used the same words that he interviewed in the news of the impending separation for Trackhouse when it was announced. However, he never provided any details. Saturday, Suarez admitted that it was a very difficult situation when asked for those details, but didn't want to offer anything. However, he said, it has been several situations in the last 8 to 10 months that I haven't felt like I was used for different situations. Sometimes you don't have that feel. The chemistry has changed. It's like being in a relationship and living together and you bought a house together, but it just doesn't feel right. I'm pretty sure it was for both ways. It was just a matter of time, and sometimes you don't have that. When you're fighting for the best of the best, you need to have everything clicking in the right direction. And unfortunately, a few things have been missing over the course of the last month. Now, Ross Chastain and Shane Van Ginsburg have both won their regular season races and are likely to clinch a spot in the playoffs. Suarez is winless and needs to win his way into the playoffs. He is currently 29th in the standings. Well, it was very cool, though, when we were in Mexico a couple weeks ago. I say we. The series was in Mexico. I was watching it on TV from Arizona. And Daniel won the Xfinity race. He started in a backup car in last and came all the way to the front. So that was a great, great thing for him. And he's going to land on his feet. I'm not exactly sure where he's going to end up next year, whether he's going to be in Cup or in Xfinity. But Daniel Suarez moving on from Trackhouse Racing. Like I mentioned, NASCAR is going to start shortly. I believe the race starts at 11:30 on TNT, and you can catch that from Chicago. And we just talked about Shane Van Ginsburg is on the pole, and Michael McDowell from Glendale, Arizona, is going to be starting on the outside of the front row, and we'll have those results for you next weekend. Weird and unusual automotive news. The headline reads, a brand new 1975 Chevy Vega emerges from the world's largest time capsule after 50 years. Well, locals in Seward, Nebraska sealed a time capsule on July 4th, 1975. It was the world's largest back then, and according to the Guinness Book of World Records, inside were more than 5,000 items, personal letters, pet rocks, objects like a Kawasaki motorcycle, even a buried new Chevrolet Vega. Well, on June 26th, the city stewards cracked open the sucker and found the Vega in pretty good condition. While the bow tie was stored out of the elements for 50 years, it wasn't hermetically sealed, and the Vega shows was basically a simple plastic tarp lying over it. Through the sheet, you can find a couple little rust spots and a license plate that says 2025. Well, the Vega held up pretty darn good. And the reality is that they're going to try to see if they can get this thing running. From here, the plan is to give the Vega a solid tune-up and drive it in the city's 4th of July parade. That could be the best news that we've heard all year. Just about every example of the Ford Pinto, which was its rival during those days, could use some love these days. I'm sorry to say they spent those last 50 years above ground, where the Vega, well, it was stored below ground. So a Vega sitting in a time capsule for 50 years looks pretty darn good. And we'll see if they can get that thing running, and hopefully they made it into the parade. Well, let's talk some gas prices with our friends over at AAA. Right now, the average gas price in the United States is $3.14 a gallon. Here in Arizona, we're at $3.22. New Mexico, $2.83. Colorado, $3.01. Utah, $3.30. Nevada, $3.76. California, $4.55. Texas, $2.69. Oklahoma, $2.69 as well. All right, let's see what's going on here with our gas prices. Well, the cheapest gas in the state is in Littlefield, Arizona at the TA Express, $2.64. The Costco in Prescott at $2.65. The Arco station in Prescott at $2.65 as well. Ah, the Union gas station on Camino Verde in Tucson at $2.69. And the Fast Trip in Bullhead City at $2.75. All right, let's see what's going on with our gas prices here in Metro Phoenix. Well, these prices are looking better. How about $2.83 at the Sam's Club on Gilbert Road in Gilbert, the Sam's Club in Avondale at $2.87, Costco on McDowell in Avondale at $2.89, also the Costco on 33rd Avenue and the Costco on 33rd Avenue is at $2.89 as well. The Arco station on 43rd Avenue is at $2.89 cash only, and the Sinclair station on West Indian School is at $2.89 as well. So there is some inexpensive gas out there if you look. Motive news from the Business Journal. New luxury car storage developer eyes Scottsdale. Well, Collector Garage, the developer behind the Scottsdale luxury car storage at Apex Motor Club, has submitted documents for a proposed 6-building car storage facility near Westworld. The Collector Garage at Westworld proposes a five-acre project, which is on East McDowell Mountain Road in Scottsdale near Thompson Peak Parkway. Proposed private luxury car storage facility will feature 82,000 square feet across six buildings, five of which will house 58 garage units for sale, according to the project documents. The buildings will range from 7,200 square feet to as large as 21,000 square feet, and a sixth building will be used for a clubhouse and office space. The prospective buyer will be able to purchase a garage, design it, and build it out to their own specific space accommodations and needs. According to the project narrative, each garage can fit about 5 to 6 classic car vehicles. This also elevates Scottsdale's appeal to the aficionados for automotive and classic cars, but also broadens our tourism and economy. That's pretty interesting, right there by where Barrett Jackson is held every year. Well, it's time for a little car talk. Dear Car Talk, my question is about gasoline. The conventional wisdom said I should buy top gas like Chevron, Shell, etc. Is that better for your engine than sold at the mom and pop discount stores? Is that true? I don't want to be penny wise and pound foolish with my money. And that's from Mickey. Well, originally all gasoline comes from the same place, Mickey. Dead dinosaurs. From the ground, crude oil goes to a refinery where it's turned into gasoline. Then it sits in huge storage tanks. And at that point, the gasoline is all the same. But once the gasoline retailer buys a batch of it, that's when things change. Shell, Chevron, and Fred's Burritos, they order their fuel supply, and then the refiner adds a package of detergents and additives specific and paid for by that retailer. So Fred's Burritos and Gas may tell the refiner, let's just put in the minimum required detergent package because they want to compete on price. Now, how do you know which retailer has better gas? Well, in 2004, a group of automakers confirmed that the dirt and carbon deposits from the gasoline would shorten the lives of their engines, and they got together to agree on an additive package to meet a higher standard. That became top-tier gasoline. And top-tier gasoline has a package of detergents and additives that meets the requirements set by Audi, BMW, Ford, General Motors, Honda, Mercedes-Benz, Subaru, Stellantis, Toyota, and Volkswagen. Now, does top tier make a difference? Well, the equivalent, they had a survey done by AAA in 2016, and they used 3 top tier gasolines and 3 non-top tier fuels. After the equivalent of 4,000 miles, the non-top tier gasoline engines had 19 times as much carbon on their valves as the top tier valves. So based on the evidence, I'd have to recommend the top tier gasoline, especially if you drive one of the above vehicles. Now, the reality is the best way to find out where these gasoline stations are is go to toptiergas.com and see if the brand you used is a top tier. But most major brands are, including Costco. So they have to put it in all their fuels, not just the premium. So any fuel you can use, regular, will still have the same package of additives and detergents as the premium. So that's the story, Mickey. So look it up and buy cleaner gasoline when you can. Yeah, I tend to buy most of my gasoline at Costco just because it just saves enough money. And certainly with my pickup truck, which holds 22 gallons of fuel, it definitely makes a value statement there. Try to get the cheapest gasoline, but the best as possible. Well, that's all the time we have the car show today, folks. My name's Jeff Wine. We'll meet you back again on the radio next Sunday, and you're listening to Sun Sounds Radio of Arizona.